Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Long Beach, to another edition of Swoop's World right here at blogtalkradio.com. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happenings here in Long Beach. Our number, if you want to call in, is 917-889-7449. You can email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Once again, you want to call in tonight? That number is 917-889-7449. Sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World. Hey, and welcome to another edition of Swoop's World. I'm all right, tonight at 9 o'clock. Tonya Ranga. She'll be our another. What have you been doing this week, man?
I stay busy with the kids, you know. Well, you know how it is in summertime you got kids. It's like being the tour director on the Disney cruise ship. That's your job. Your job is to make sure they're entertained and at the same time they're not beating the crap out of each other. Because, you know, for them, that's the same thing. Beating the crap out of each other and being entertained.
That's fun. I know.
Make sure they're not doing that.
Cool.
Today we went to the, Science Center downtown L.A., and that was nice. So for anybody who's interested in or has an interest at all in the pharaohs and the Egyptian stuff, mummies and all that, pretty cool show. They've got a whole show where they have, I don't know, probably 30 or 40 mummies from all over the world, not just Egyptian ones, but there's mummies from all over. And they have those, which is really interesting. And then they also have a really interesting IMAX feature.
Oh, really?
That, as I said to you earlier, I don't need to spend $3,000 to go to Egypt, you know, worry about terrorists and dysentery and all that. I've done it now. It was that intense. You know, you were just like, wow, I'm in Egypt. It was pretty cool, I got to tell you.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was a good show.
You know, I'm not real big on 3D. You have to wear the glasses?
Yeah, wear the glasses. But this one, most of the time, that's not a good thing, I think. I mean, because I can always see, but for some reason, the IMAX ones, especially, I haven't been to a lot of them, so maybe it's not true of all of them. But the one at that center there, the Science Center there, really, you don't even realize you're looking at some point you pull off the glasses just to go, what's this like without them?
Yeah.
But, you know, after that, it's really well done. And you don't feel like you're ever watching a 3D. You feel like you're like totally immersed, except for all the little kids around. I felt he was totally immersed in Egypt. But it was cool.
Very cool.
A little pricey, you know, well, not for what the experience was, but, It was cool. It was definitely a good trip.
So you're recommending you put the stamp of approval on?
I definitely would put the stamp of approval, especially if you got kids that are in the, like my son is 9, about to be 10.
Yeah.
If you got kids in that range, they're probably going to love it. They're just like, ooh. The little kids don't necessarily get it all, and the older kids are like, well, no big deal. Dead bodies. but that range, you know, that probably 8 to 14, I would guess, probably really get a kick out of it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've seen all the advertising for it and all the mummy stuff, and, you know, I was kind of thinking, I'm kind of torn on that, you know. I was like, do these people sign one of those releases so you can send their body to science and traipse it all over the world?
Well, I don't know about that. But one of the things that was really interesting was that in the show, they talk about how, like one of the very first things they talk about the how the mummies, and we don't know how mummies were made, so we decided we'd make a mummy. You know, and so they actually do. They take a body that somebody donated to science, and they don't show you a whole lot
in that
regard. But this guy who's an Egyptologist or a mummyologist or whatever his official title is, actually he, between reading a whole bunch of stuff, figured out, okay, this is how I think they do it. And so he went and actually did it with a dead, recently dead body.
Right.
And then, so he shows you, you know, kind of like, again, really, there's not much gore at all involved. But you know they're dealing they show you lifting a body. You know, and you're like, wow, I mean, am I watching CSI? Or it was that kind of thing, right? And so they Jim lifting it off the gurney onto the thing, and blah, 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 and I'd read an article on this, so I kind of knew this was kind of coming. He did the whole thing about with this body, exactly what they did with
the original. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, which means he cut up their abdomen, took out all the different organs, put it in natron, which is a combination of basically like a salt combined with.
So they brined it.
Basically, he brined it.
That's a brine.
And then wrapped it in the, you know, so he did the whole, and he, now they don't show you that whole process, but I had read, we get the Natural History Museum magazine, and they had a whole thing on him doing this about 4 or 5 years ago. So now this is kind of the end.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is the end product. So it was kind of cool to see that. Like, again, this, like the article I read was way more intense
than
what we saw.
Yeah.
Because what their big focus was on the Egyptians. And like I said, you spent time to talk about how Ramses, the first, second, and third, how their mummies were basically found. And it was a weird circumstance. So that was more the focus of it. But it starts with this guy going, well, in order to understand the Egyptians and understand what they did with the mummies, we had to actually recreate a mummy.
Huh?
And then they do. And so, you know, in that regard, it was kind of interesting. I know the kids were just like, they were just, whoa, they were hooked from the moment.
Right.
I have a daughter who's, you know, 4, and about as young as you probably want to, you know, where she could actually understand things. And I don't know that she understood it all, but she was like, bug-eyed. Even through the glasses, I could tell she was bug-eyed. Like, wow,
cool. It's funny you should say that. I saw a show, a documentary, I don't know, a few years ago, about a guy, it's like a coroner type, and he has some land, and I believe it's in Tennessee, I could be wrong, where he does a study on the bugs and at the time of death, and there's a lot of dead corpses that they just lay them out there, and pig, and he used pigs a lot too, and different stages of decomposition. And then he's like this, what was it, entomologist? Is that the bug?
I think so, yeah.
He's this expert, so he gets called all over the world when they, you know, these have these unsolved crimes and stuff, and he can look at the bugs and go, well, this body's been dead this long because this type of fly, you know, lays larvae on a decomposing body at this stage. And it was pretty interesting. You get the same type of, you know, experience with these guys. They're taking dead bodies to, you know, match the science.
Figure out the real thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and their big focus, too, as far as doing this was one reason. So they could figure out where they need to look for DNA in a mummy.
Uh-huh.
Because if they could figure out where the DNA in the mummy is, they were, I think this is where the funding came from, they could then figure out malaria, how it's changed over the 3,000 years, and so then we could figure out how to treat malaria. Because in a lot of countries, that's still a huge, huge problem. I mean, thousands of people yearly die from malaria.
Wow.
So they were like, so if we could figure out how it's mutated in these 3,000 years, then we can figure out how we need to, you know, attack it, and that was the theory behind it all. So I think that's where they got the funding from. There was a whole section on that. I'm like, I didn't quite see that. They didn't connect all the dots, but I'm thinking that's what they must have pitched to somebody.
So to get some funding, right? Exactly.
To make it all happen. But either way, like I said, it made for a very interesting show. The mummy actual, so there's the show, and then there's the mummy part where you actually go in the upper floor, third floor there, which was way too crowded for me. I get freaked out when there's too many people near me. So it also made it hard to like read all the, I'm the guy that likes to read all the tags. Look at all the stuff. So I was like, well, I'm gonna push people out of the way. But the kids, they didn't care. For them, it was like being on the playground and bumping into everybody. They don't care. So that was a little frustrating for me. But if you go early, I think you'd avoid most of those crowds. And it would be worth seeing if you're into that at all. It would be worth seeing.
All right, you heard it here, man. Peter has put the stamp of approval on the mummy exhibit, and that the science museum of science in
California Science Center. I think is the official. That's the one that's at the exposition park.
Exposition park.
And it's free to. They ask for a donation. It's free to get into the museum itself, really. And then these exhibits and the IMAX cost, and I forget what it was, but it was, I think it was somewhere in the $15 range for both the IMAX show and the special mummy exhibit. And let me tell you, there, yeah, it's not bad. And there was a whole bunch of other part of the because the exhibit and the IMAX show took up so much time that we really didn't get to see.
Right.
And they have, for me, what was new, because we'd been there back 6-7 months ago, they had a whole new environment. Shoot, I forget the name of the exhibit, but it's a brand new, basically, wing. And we didn't get to see it all because I didn't realize it was open. And so we didn't get to see, like, a whole section of the... So you could go there and just skip the mommy thing if you're not interested and go check that out. And they had, like, a kelp forest, they had sharks, they had all kinds of hands-on stuff for the kids.
Very cool. All right, Long Beach, we're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we're going to introduce our guest, former 7th District Councilperson, Tonya Reyes-Aranga. So let's go to our first break. We'll be right back. On this week's Friends of Soup's World segment, we spotlight two local businesses, Alfred's English Gardens and Richco Gates. Kathy Alford of Alfred's English Gardens was recently chosen by the City of Long Beach Water Department to help educate homeowners about alternative low-water garden options. Visit the website and click on eSmart Gardens for case studies and photo galleries of gorgeous gardens in Long Beach. Go to www.kathyalford.com. Richco Gates. Richco is a local builder that specializes in locally handcrafted outdoor woodwork built specifically for each client. Richco believes in doing a great job and having fun in the process. He builds gates in a variety of styles. Check out the photo gallery at richcogates.com for more information. If you'd like to become a friend of Swoops World and have your business mentioned on our air, send us an email at swoopsworld@gmail.com. And back to our guests right after this.
I can meet it around you.
And welcome back to Long Beach. If you want to give us a call, it's 917-889-7449. You can always follow us on Facebook, Twitter. Our chat line's open, and you can send us an email at swoopsworld@gmail.com. Are you back with us, Peter?
I think so.
All right, good. Well, let us introduce our guest, our first guest of the night, Tonya Reyes-Aranga, former 7th District Councilperson. How you doing, Tonya?
Pretty good. That former is the first time I've heard that. I'll
have to
get used to that.
You're going to have to get used to it.
Oh, man. So, yeah, first off, what are you going to be doing?
Oh, everyone asks that. Isn't that something? It's like, give me a chance to take a breath. You know, my first night, what did I do? I went to the council meeting. Couldn't get in, you know.
Card went out of it.
I went to see the swearing in. I thought it was quite interesting. And, you know, it's always interesting on the odd districts because it combines the citywide elected officials as well as the odd number districts because it's kind of election on steroids or swearing in on steroids it's in mass. It was quite short. But even you guys were somewhat short. James Johnson took my place and Steve Neal didn't do bad. They were pretty good. The thing that the vote, I don't know if you were there, but the vice mayor vote was interesting.
I read about it.
That was deadlocked, and to carry it over was deadlocked. And so, you know, the person next to me said, "Wow, what a dysfunctional council." And I just smiled and said, "Isn't that nice? That's what they said when I was there." So
it wasn't your fault.
It wasn't my fault.
It was the other one, clearly.
Well, you know, at least it's not totally me. So,
That was, there's been some, if you don't want to talk about them, just let us know. There's been some just unusual things going on the last, I don't know.
6-8 months?
Six months. We've talked about quite a few things, and if we'd like to get your take on some of those things that were going on.
Well, you've never known me to not talk. I was on the record. I figured it's straighter that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, what was the first one we were talking about today?
Well, one of our questions that we always wondered about was the whole pot dispensary, marijuana dispensary, however you want to call that. And we always felt like, and we had, at one point we talked to Thal about it, I believe, and there were some interesting, you know, and for us, one of the questions we always had was, well, first of all, how you kind of felt about it personally, and whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, but also whether it's a legal thing, because there's apparently still quite a bit of debate whether this is going to stand the test of time legally.
Probably not. I mean, it's a work in progress. I was the one that originally brought it to the council. Actually, it was Mike Middleton from Baja Sonora came and said, why do I have to pay for everything and get a license for everything I do? And these guys can just sell this stuff out of their front, you know, door without anything. They have no business license, no health department inspection, nothing. And he was pretty upset. And so I wanted to finish my coffee, so I promised him I'd do something. We had met, I think, with Coffee Grind or something, one of those. But so I did. I put it on the council, and I put it on the agenda. Little did I know that it would end up like this. But I think it's important because any large city is going to have to weigh in on this. And what happens in November is going to be really, really important. I mean, I don't think it's going to be legalized, but who knows? Stranger things have happened,
yeah.
and it may just happen, which would really take our ordinance in another direction. Because the whole tax issue that came up at the last, this past month, is really going to be important for us. That money will go to the general fund, and that's beyond the fees. That's just a tax that will allow us to kind of build our general fund. But a lot of the council people, Jerry Shipsky and Robert Garcia, don't want to tax the medical marijuana aspect of it. You know, it's a thin line either way you look at it.
Well, my question always was, if we're going to look at it as a medical treatment, should they be charged anything different than a CVS or a Rite Aid? Are they paying a different set of taxes? Are they is the process for getting their business license different? If the council or the city is going to look at it as a medical facility, shouldn't they be held to the same standards as all the other medical dispensaries? Or are they being punished because it's something that it's still in the gray area?
They're being punished because it's still in the gray area, definitely. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, mince words here. I think part of the problem is that we should ideally, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, treat it as a medical substance and say that, you know, the problem is that the federal government doesn't define it as such, and there is no prescription, there's only a letter of recommendation. So even though we may think here in California and try to do it at the municipal level, we really can't do it because we have the backdrop of the whole federal definition. And so, and then you couple that with the fact that, you know, there's no doctor that's going to rightfully give you a prescription. So it's very tough to do that. So medicine is not taxed, but we do and are going to tax recreational use if it becomes approved. The medical is yet to be seen here. Now, that's besides the fee that we're going to have in terms of the licensing fee, the application fee, and it's up to Wazoo. It's up to $25,000 now. So, I mean, the whole argument that the council used about not wanting the big guys to get involved, the, what are those called, the mafiosos, the, you know, cartels, is kind of ridiculous because the guy on the street or the lady who's trying to just help out her patients is not going to be able to afford that. So we're very schizophrenic in this policy. It's not a very good, solid policy, but I don't know anywhere in the state that is. So it's at best a work in progress.
Well, along those lines, what about with, how do you feel, have you been following, first of all, the stuff that's going on in Oakland, where they're talking about creating sounds like a huge
dispensary.
I mean,
a huge
factory, basically, where they're going to produce, I think they said something like 70 pounds of marijuana daily, and then they're going to have a bakery so they can produce treats, and of course all this has to be approved by the city of Oakland. Have you been following this, and what do you think, is that where we're heading here in Long Beach or
no,
not?
No, you know, Long Beach is way conservative. I don't think that if we're going to do it, just let's do it. I mean, Ray Gablish has always requested that we get some cost estimates for the city growing and selling its own through the health department, but that's not going to happen here. You go, Ray.
Visionary!
I don't think it's going to happen here. It's going to be a stretch. And, Ray, you look at Jerry Shipke's, he's fighting every single tooth and nail for any store opening up, even though it's quote unquote, following the guidelines. It's going to be tough.
Right. We have a question from Chris from LB Food Review.
Well, I've been to some of the dispensaries up north.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of them in Berkeley actually not only sell you the baked goods and the weed itself, but you can actually sit in these facilities and smoke as much as you want, get massages. Like, there's all kinds of medical stuff that goes along, massages and counseling that goes along with it, and making sure that you understand the whole what's going on with using it and everything like this. And it's a completely different culture in Northern California.
Well, yeah, Northern California is completely. I mean, you got Humboldt County up there, which is
San Francisco itself.
It's
known for being.
In Berkeley, you could literally walk down the street smoking a joint, and you're going to get a ticket with a beer in your hand before you're going to get one.
Well, you ask any kid that may be smoking over at Huntington Beach, what do? It's a misdemeanor. They get their hands slapped. They have to go to court, and they do a couple of hours of public service. And if they're under a certain age, under 21 or 18, they get it wiped off their record. So it's weird,
Yeah.
It depends what food you're in. Let me get that straight first.
I do know a little bit about those laws, and, it's less – that's just – personal use laws, which is basically a ticket. You're right. Basically a ticket. Person's got a good ID, and, the driver's license or ID card, you can identify who they are, it's just a ticket. It's essentially the same, so at least from custody. But
I've understood that Oakland has now decriminalized marijuana.
That's what I read in the paper, was that, I don't know if there's something officially on the book, but essentially that's what
basically,
I read in the paper.
It's like Boulder, Colorado. If you're in Boulder, you can carry up to an 8 with you on your person, and if a police officer catches you, there's no, because you're carrying under the specified amount. And that's kind of the way it is in Oakland. As long as you're not carrying a distributable amount, they really just don't care.
Yeah, I think when you say decriminalized, I think that leaves a little bit to be desired, because I think what happens is they are state laws. Mm-hmm. So a city can't change a state law. But what they do is they tell their people we're not really enforcing this.
Right.
The DA's not filing on it, or the city attorney's not going to file on it. So you just kind of they don't enforce it.
Yeah, right. They lowered their priority.
Exactly, but it's still. I mean, because you cannot create a law that supersedes the state law, and the state can't. Which is odd, because the state can't supersede a federal law.
Yeah,
and this is where we are with this.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I wonder about, where we're going with this ballot initiative in November. How quickly, if it passes, how quickly will the federal government sue California over that law? Is that something that would be in the future?
No, because I think what the federal, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that the federal government has said that states that have voted to create these dispensaries, they're just kind of letting the states kind of handle their thing to an extent.
That being said, though, in the article I read all about the Oakland factory, I think it was in San Francisco or just outside San Francisco, somebody had been raided by the Fed, and they took all 100 plants that they had, and it didn't say that anybody had been arrested, but they confiscated all of the plants.
Yeah.
So, there seems to be some really fuzzy lines there.
Well,
when you cross.
It's similar to, and then we'll go on another subject. It's similar to what's going on here. When they first started opening dispensaries here, the DEA was enforcing the laws, and the DEA was doing the searches along with local municipalities. The DEA has since kind of backed off on the dispensaries. Some of the local municipalities still enforce it, but they've kind of backed off, and I think that's probably the same thing that happened up there. It's once whatever region that is, once
right.
the word from that ASAC, whatever they call them up there, decides, they'll back off.
It's interesting to see that a lot of the dispensaries in Long Beach, For a long time, they never had security guards standing out in front of them. Nowadays, you're seeing many of them with armed guards standing in front of them because a lot of these people have not only been raided by law enforcement, but they get vandalized and stolen from by, whoever it is. They break in. They know there's a bunch of weed in there. They know the street value of
it. Well, and it is now in the ordinance that they're required to have security.
Yeah.
So
it's a cash and carry business, and it's a lot of cash.
Oh, too.
So
yeah.
That's why you had those robberies up in Hollywood just a couple of weeks ago. Let's move on to something else. there was talk this week. Who was it? DeLong? Was it Jerry DeLong? One of the council people wanted to create a teleconference from the Bahamas to vote on the vice mayor.
I don't know if you read my comments in the AlbyReport.com, but I told him he needed to get off the sun deck, put down his Mai Tai, and get to work. And if he thought it was so important to call in from the Bahamas, that he actually needed to come to Long Beach and vote. I think it is something that all elected officials should be able to exercise that right. However, only in emergency situations. If we're not without a vice mayor, that's not an emergency in my eyes. I mean, it's pretty much ceremonial. And
that's not what Val Lertz would have said.
Probably.
We love Val, but still, he wouldn't have said that.
Well, I think the other side of the coin, though, what happens is when you do that, it has to be posted and accessible to the public. And I don't think any, in my eyes, a private club in the Bahamas, 534 acres of serene, you know, beautiful shoreline, is great. But we couldn't quite figure out the address as to where that teleconferencing would be held. And not that I was going to actually go, but it would have been nice. And so I called and looked, and I couldn't find a thing. And that really is the reason why he withdrew. It wasn't because it was going to be postponed, but because he could not prove that he had actually, one, posted the announcement, and two, there was found a place that was going to be open to the public in his private resort.
Well, in my understanding from reading one of the articles in one of the websites, one of the reporters called down there and spoke to somebody down there and asked them a series of questions about, whether or not anybody could just walk on. No, you have to be on the list. And I think that kind of defeats one of the purposes, right?
Exactly. Well, I think more so than that is the whole arrogance. And I'm not nothing against Gary, because Gary knows I speak my mind. But just the arrogance of assuming that the public is not going to care about this. I mean, the same person was involved in the move to try to only, take it to two meetings a month.
That was our next question.
yes, we are a part-time council. We're part-time compensated. We get part-time, part of the mayor's pay, but 25% of what the mayor makes. And he doesn't even have a vote. But we are actually a full-time committed council. So it's tough.
Well, the question, glad you bring that up. The question that we had was, when you run for office, you kind of know what the hours are and the meeting date, the meeting schedule is, and whatnot. And I think you were the one that said take a job and then say, I like the job, but now I only want to come in half the time.
but you paid the full.
But
job.
You paid the same. Why do you think that was even suggested?
I really do believe that if you look at what's happening with the shrinking of the boards and commissions, you look at how the role of the city manager has been diminished somewhat. We have a strong mayor, which is fine, but we should have a strong mayor form of government. Right now we have a city manager, city council form of government. Let's do it right. Let's go to the vote of the people and say, yes, we want the mayor to appoint all the department heads. We haven't done that. And so it's kind of a de facto government switch of our government structure, which allows one or two people to really make decisions and participate and minimize the participation of the public, which to me is not the democratic way. So if we're going to do it, let's let the public know we're going to do it and let them vote on it and say, yes, we don't want to have to really get involved in this whole thing. So, but don't do it on the fly. And I think that's the problem, is that people expect to get involved in the government, and the less people that are involved in the decisions on a daily basis, or even on a monthly or a weekly basis, then the more opportunity you have for power to be concentrated in a few. And I know it's kind of a philosophical discussion to be had, but that's what our founding fathers fought against. And so, this is democracy at the very basic level.
Well, and one of the things we talked about was that to create less of an opportunity for people to be involved when only 20% voted. I mean, we already have a very limited amount of people interested as it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take even more time away, we're going to get less. I mean, less
involvement.
Less involvement, and it seemed just like a really like a bad proposal to me.
It did.
Well, and Robert Garcia did back out, and I think they had Pooja Lowenthal, Gary DeLong, and Robert Garcia. He has since said that he thought it was a bad idea after he got, I'm sure, a mountainous phone call. But, you know, to his credit, he did say, okay, I changed my mind. So that leads to, I don't think it will be introduced again. At least I hope not. But who knows, he may have found a third.
Well, and then along those lines, as far as compensation goes, Super and I have had this conversation dozens of times with dozens of different people, and everyone's got kind of a different opinion on it. But it seems like you're getting paid part-time. It seems like a full-time job.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It seems like, I mean, because Swoop and I know from all the places we saw you and Val and many others, I mean, you're always working on. I mean, how do you feel about, I mean, personally, with all the stuff that's going on with the city of Bell and all that, I mean,
that's where you want to be city manager.
That's where you want to be, yeah. But, you know, the question is, I guess, basically, how do you feel about, I mean, I personally feel that we shouldn't pay our city officials a ton of money, but we should definitely pay them if they're doing the work, they should get paid. So if you're doing a full-time job, you should get paid a full-time. And Long Beach is a big city, as we've established many times. 500,000 people, it's about the size of D.C. or Atlanta.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we be getting our city council members paid?
Second largest city in L.A. County. The mayor makes $120,000, $130,000, and so we get 25% of what the mayor makes. When he first got elected, he said, you know, I'll do this for a dollar. I guess he was going to do the Schwarzenegger. We said, hell no. That means we get a quarter. So he said, okay, I'll take this paycheck. But what happens is, I think, you know, we also get a budget for our offices. And right now with the equalization plan, we get about $350,000 to run our offices, which really is eaten up by three or four staff members, two to three, maybe four staff members, and all the other benefits and pencils, pens, phones, technology, which is increasingly a big part of the budget. You know, my recommendation was to allow the council people to get 50% of the mayor's salary, but keep it within the $350,000. So there's no increase to the budget. They can decide, or they can take that 50% of the mayor's, so which essentially takes them to $60,000 or $55,000 to $60,000. Decent. I think Fresno is around there. Fresno, come on, Fresno.
Yeah. We're way bigger than Fresno.
Well, actually, we're about neck and neck.
Are we?
Yeah, so that's bad. I hate it.
We always seem bigger.
We're more cosmopolitan, right?
We definitely are.
You know, I would say I know Robert Garcia pretty well. We were fraternity brothers, and we've had a lot to do with each other over the years, and that man works. Everything I go to in this city, Robert Garcia makes an appearance at. I was just at, by the way, we talked about the HOPE project of getting the house in silent seconds and everything. I went to the NSP2 program that they had at the Scottish Rite Center last week. And, you know, we'll talk about that later, you know, because I got all the details like you guys asked me to. But who was there introducing the program? Robert Garcia. The guy works.
He also has a full-time job at City College, and my husband's a trustee, and so if you tell him that Robert works while he's being paid full-time at City College, and so at some point you have to justify your full-time job with your counsel. And so every single person, and I told this to Johnson and to Steve, Neil, that every single person except those that were either retired or self-employed, within 2 to 3 years, either quit their job or decrease their hours.
Yeah, it doesn't seem possible to have a full-time or even a part-time job and do the job you were doing. And obviously you have to from a financial point of view, or you're talking about then you're getting retirees. It seems to me that this is a problem with the system in that we do need to pay these people for the work they're doing. It's a full-time job. They should get something close to full-time wages. And it's a government, so you're never going to get paid what a CEO of some big company.
Except for the city of Bell.
But it does seem like, to me, I'm all for it. You know, if you're going to work for the government, because my wife did for years, and you know when you go into it, you're going to get less than what you could somewhere else. And that's fine. but you still get paid at least a full-time wage. You guys weren't even getting paid a full-time wage. And it, what Chris was just saying was, same with you and Val, we saw you guys everywhere. We were bumping into you here and there, and we're only going to, like, a fraction of what we know you were going to.
Well, the National League of Cities said that a city our size, traditionally a council person would spend about 60 hours a week. But if they didn't, if they weren't enthusiastic, then it'd be at least 40.
Yeah.
Which is a full time. It's a full time job. May not be Monday. It may not be 9 to 5, but evenings and weekends. So.
Don't start another question yet. We're going to a quick break,
okay,
and then we'll be right back. And we're here with our guest, Tonya Reyes-Aranga, and the LB Food Review. So we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Long Beach, you know that beat? And you know it's time for me to tell you about another friend of Soup's World. Well, I'm going to tell you about Ink Piece. Ink Piece sells environmentally responsible ink and toner cartridges for printers, fax machines, and copiers at prices from 30 to 70% below the major office stores. Owned and operated by our good friend Mark Hawkins. Mark's very active in the community. Local business located at 3636 Atlantic Avenue inside the Copy House. Check out the website, www.classroomrelief.com. What better time with a time around Earth Day to go out there and get yourself some environmentally responsible products. Check out Ink Peace, 3636 Atlantic Avenue, inside the Copy House. And back to our show right after this.
And welcome back to Soup's World on blogtalkradio.com, where you can reach us every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. We're here. If you want to give us a call, it's 917-889-7449. Where the chat line is open. If you've got a question, just go ahead and type in the chat line. You can always find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and send us an email at soupsworld@gmail.com. Peter, you had a question before I cut you off there. Go to the next break.
I did. I'd almost forgotten it. So my question is, do you know, Tonya, what other cities about our size, what are their council members getting paid? Are we below, above? Where do we stand?
We were about comparable to Fresno. And then they...
That doesn't count.
Yeah, well, you know, but actually...
What about D.C. or Atlanta? Two cities that we are about the same size.
Well, you know what? We are the same. We were slightly larger than Fresno, and this past year they surpassed us. I know that's really embarrassing.
Wow.
But they are now larger, slightly larger than us by about 1,000 or 2. And so it's pretty embarrassing. But before they surpassed us, when we were still bigger than they were, they actually went, they had made about what we made, which is 27. We made about 28, 29. I think we make about 29, 30. They now went up to about the 55,000. So, you know, I mean, they're all realizing that it does take, especially when with the new age of technology, that those residents that are tech savvy really want answers and want answers now. And so you have to be there.
I have a question. You did 2 terms. What were your goals when you came on the first time? And what do you think? Did you reach those goals? What accomplishments did you have during the time? And were there anything that you had set out to do that you think you might have fallen short on and wish you had more time to complete?
Well, it was actually 16 years ago when I made my first run. And I lost, and then 8 years later I ran again, and I won, and that's when I started my 2 terms, my 8 years on the council. But I think even 16 years ago it was the same. Was I wanted to have a youth council, and that was before the youth councils were even formed or thought about. I wanted to be able to have increased participation in local government, especially for the areas that were underrepresented, like the West Side, West Long Beach, and I wanted to be able to enhance small business community, and I believe increased park space. And that was 16 years ago. I think I did all of that. The only thing that I'm really sorry that I couldn't really push through, and I think a lot of it had to do with economic times hitting as it did as a small business community. We have no large industry or businesses in the 7th District, or very few. And the small business community, because we don't have redevelopment funds or CDBG funds, we're a rather healthy, or at least compared to maybe the six, the central area or north town, we're a pretty healthy community in terms of income level for our residents. So we didn't qualify for CDBG or redevelopment. And the chamber really was focusing on large businesses and not small businesses. So the infrastructure was not there to help. And I also have to say that probably the weakest link in city government is our economic development department. I think it's pretty non-existent now. So I think that's the only thing that I was pretty disappointed in that I wasn't able to do. But we did get the first youth council. We were able to expand double, if not triple, park space in the area. And I have now a 7-district resident on every board and commission, charter board and commission, and almost every board and commission in the city.
Wow. Congratulations. Hey, is it time for the, is this the first flight of the night?
That's the first flight. We'll get another one in about 10, 15 minutes.
All right.
And speaking of the airport, we were able to get a quieter home program going. So that's something.
Oh, yeah, actually, he was so, we talked to
the airport guy.
The airport guy.
Mario.
last week. The airport director.
Well, you know,
hopefully he's not listening right now.
Greg Abbott and I, when we first we wanted to do this, we wanted to have airport dollars, passenger fees go to the residents and not just infrastructure at the airport. And so we proposed this 3 years ago with the majority of the homes that were qualified were in the 7th and 8th district. Fast forward 3 years, we finally got it passed. Now none of them qualify. It's all in the 4th. We were looking at each other going, what are we doing?
That's exactly what the guy said, right? Mario said
it. It's on the other side.
So the hope is that next year we'll be able to get 7th and 8th district residents to qualify because of the, I'm going to say, the good, bad, and ugly of the military side, that they are included in that noise map. So we're going to be able to qualify. So every time you hear the sound of freedom, go, yes, I might get my window ventilated.
The sound of freedom. Lately,
yeah,
I've been hearing the sound of freedom at 10:30 every,
oh,
and it's
yeah.
Freaking loud at 10:30. I mean, I'm like, whatever that is, you guys just heard that one that went by. It's about 3 or 4 times as loud at 10:30. I'm like,
oh, yeah. It'd be nice if you could let freedom ring a little less loud.
Or maybe, I don't, you know, honestly, I don't mind if freedom rings loud. I would just like it to read.
Earlier.
Say before 9, before I got the kids to bed, before my wife in bed.
Yeah, we have absolutely no
but
control.
Absolutely not. No.
how difficult is it to form, I wouldn't say alliances, but like I was, you know, talking about the vice mayor vote, everything's split right down the middle until somebody comes back. So how difficult is it to get things through as a team and the city council?
It's not difficult depending on the topic, but there's 95% we agree on everything. It's that 5% that's crucial, and it's that 5% is, are people going to stick to their guns or compromise? And I will compromise unless it's something that's extremely important to my district. And some people will stick to the guns and not compromise just because they can. So I think that's the key, is to try to find out if there's any way to get them to just do it if it's not important to their constituents. Because it is tough. Some people just like to stick you.
Right.
And that's not how it should be played. But who knows? That's what they call it, politics.
So I know you're on the AQMD?
I was, no longer, because when you're not an elected official, there's elected and appointed, and I was elected,
okay.
Which was pretty awesome. We first went on the city, represented the city of Long Beach on that board, mm-hmm. 4 counties.
Wow, and that's air quality is always going to be an issue here, and especially in your district. I mean, you're close to 710. And
most importantly,
710, the airport, the harbor, all of it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're center of it all, man.
It's terrible. It's awful. I used to go in those meetings and hear the studies. Just that particulate matter that gets in your lungs and your blood and mother's milk and your brain and your very cell development. And you think, you wonder, could it be the unknown cause of so many diseases, the increase in autism, Alzheimer's, you know, possibly, you know, Parkinson's. There's just so much that you don't know
right.
About the development of our body.
Well, and the scary thing about that, on those lines, is the generations.
Oh.
Long Beach is a place where people have generation. Swoop and I, over the years, have met these people, you know, like where they've had, oh, my great grandfather lived here and I lived here. And that's another really interesting thought, is because it's one thing for one generation, but when you talk about over a period of time, you're talking that's, you know, could be a whole other factor. It's just that being here long enough to, you know, suffer that. Because most of these studies are 10 years or 5 years.
Well, I don't want to say it's good, but I always thought that the worst air was in West Long Beach because it was adjacent to the ports and the railroads and the rail yards and the freeways. And it's pretty bad, but it gets blown out. The actual, multiple air toxic study that we do on an every 3-year basis at HMD, the worst air is south of 7th Street. So all those high-class condos.
That's where I always live, south of 7th Street.
South of 7th Street. Because when the ships come in to the port, they kind of idle, they have to slow down, and they come in. That's who gets hit first. And those ships come in right after another. And unfortunately, from 7th Street to the shore, the high-priced homes, you may look good, you may not feel good.
I've never been so happy to live 200 feet north of 7th Street.
Yeah, 200 feet's going to save you, huh?
Hey, 100 feet south,
all right? That's right.
A strong breeze, and we'll set up our fans to start blowing you away. You know, another question I had, because, and does the mayor usually endorse candidates?
No.
You stepped in it.
But I think this mayor is, again, came from private sector. And he's used to doing things his way and having things his way. And I think democracy is messy. Democracy requires patience.
Definitely not.
And it's different. And so I don't think he really enjoys it. And I've told him that, too. So I don't, you know, it's no secret. A lot of people know that's what my perception is. If you've ever been to the council meetings, I think you get that drift. So I think he definitely would like to see it easier. And it's now that, you know, he brought in James Johnson to change the charter 3 years ago. Now he has a strong mayoral veto. He doesn't have to count on 5. He has to count to 6, which means we have to count to 6. And we also, you know, he has more power over the boards and commissions. So it makes it easier for him to do what he wants to do without having to answer to anybody. And that it's a little bit sad because people don't participate like they should. And it's okay if his intentions are good, which I'm sure they are. But if we happen to have a mayor, and not this mayor, but if we happen to have a mayor in the future that may not be, intentions may not be in the best interest of our community, then it could be problematic. And that's why I say, let's do it right, go to the vote of the people. You want a strong mayor, form of government where the mayor has accountability with appointments and with everything else, then let's do it. Right now, there's no accountability. He has no vote. He has no appointments. He has nothing but under-the-table influence, and that's through endorsing candidates, raising a hell of a lot of money, and doing what he wants to do through whatever innuendos and threats and things like that. So all I'm saying is if you're going to do it, let's have some accountability, because it's always going to be the council's fault or the city manager's fault, and we fire the city manager. So essentially, it's always the council's fault, but yet we can't get anything done if, in fact, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars going to campaigns to support the mayor's agenda.
Well, how do you feel about Mayor Bob Foster? Has he been good for Long Beach overall, or?
He's been different. I think he has the best interest of the city at heart. I just don't know if he has been in the best interest of participatory democracy and government. And I think in this stage, when we're transitioning in a multicultural city, where we need to impress on the fact that people need to be as involved as they can be, then I don't think that it's good in that sense.
How would you compare him to Beverly O'Neill?
Beverly O'Neill did what the charter says a mayor needs to do. Cheerlead the city, be a great leader in terms of bringing interest to, you know, making sure running the council meetings fine, you know, kind of staying neutral in the political area. So she did. She is like the poster child for what our city charter says a mayor should be. So
it sounds a lot like being like the Queen of England.
Yes, but that's what because we are not.
That's what our charter says.
Our charter says
okay.
We are a city manager.
I didn't know that. We're
a city manager, city council, form of government. So I think that Bob Foster is our transition mayor, but he's forcing the transition. And to be able to make that transition, you need to go to the vote of the people. That's all.
Well,
it's not good. It's not bad. It's just You need to have the community support.
One of the issues I've had recently, and I mentioned it to you, Peter, the last couple council meetings that I attended, as well as the transcript, if accurate, that I read and they'll be posted today, I think he's a little harsh with the citizens when they're talking. He seems to cut people off and challenge them on their statements. And I understand we want the truth on the record, but I also think as the mayor, and citizens, you want citizens to participate. It just seems a little hard. And one of the ones I was at, I thought he was a little hard on one of the citizens. You know, I didn't necessarily agree with the guy, but, you know, I think he came down kind of hard on him. And I've been in a lot of city council meetings that have been in several different cities, and I just have never really seen the mayor respond that way. But, you know, I don't have a problem with him. I just thought it was unusual. And that's what I said to you. I said, I don't think he's enjoying this.
A couple of meetings I've been to, he definitely looked like he would rather not be there.
Well, it's a balancing act. And if we want a strong mayor, like the mayor of LA, who appoints all the department heads, he doesn't even really attend the meetings, but there's a balance. If you're going to be a strong mayor, give the council some power to balance that out. Let us have our own legal council. Let us have a president of the council. Let us run our own meetings. Let us, you know, so there's a balancing act. And right now, it's unbalanced, and it's because of incomplete charter reform. So if you want to have a strong mayor from the government, go to the people and do it, and allow the council to gain some authority so that balance can be in effect. It's all about a balance of power. That's why if you look at our government, you have the executive, you have legislative, and just this is like, ask your kids, they know about it.
They're supposed to know about it.
Supposed to know, though.
You know, as you just compared us to LA, I mean, where is our system modeled after? Is there city similar to the same?
Well, LA is the strong mayor for local government. He appoints, and so he appoints. He doesn't run the council. They have a council president, and I think that's, you know, if you look at Foster, he was a lobbyist in Sacramento, and you look at his staff. His staff very much came from Sacramento, and it's, you know, he is not a speaker, and we are not, you know, his minions where we have to follow what the speaker says or we get cast out to an office on the other side of the Capitol, which happens. You know, it's very much that you're either with the party or with the speaker or you're not. And I think that's how he's running things, and that's just not local government. Local government is so close to the heart of what democracy is about, and it should stay that way. It should not be a Sacramento model. And if you want a strong mayor, go to the vote of the people. So.
Well, we're going to go to another break. Do you have time to sit through another break? All right. We're going to go to another break, and we'll be back. And which one am I supposed to do now, Peter? Do you remember? This one's as good as any.
On the Market Report.
Be right back.
Hey, let me tell you about another friend of Swoop's World, the Long Beach Sunday Farmers Market in the Cal Heights area, located right there at Longfellow Elementary School at California Avenue and Bixby Road. You can't miss it. It only started in November of last year, and it's grown every week. Tons of vendors there, man. Fresh produce to die for. You got fresh produce, you got crafts, you got, what do you got, music, coffee. You know, some of the people who have played there, you have Michelle Mangione's performed there, Robert John. If you haven't heard Robert John, you got to check him out. He's here quite a bit. Free cooking demonstrations by local chefs, crepes, you name it. And Swoop and Peter are there every week, teaching chess and providing chess boards for free chess play. Tons of things to do. Playground for the kids so the parents can go out there and shop. Great place to go. Long Beach Sunday Farmers Market, Longfellow Elementary School, corner of California Avenue and Bixby Road.
And let me tell you about another friend of Swoop's World. That's By Art Studios Custom Framing. And like we said before, some of you might know Don Morshige, who was a – hey, man, we're on the air over here, right? Don Morshige, who was a guest here a few months back, and she owns By Art Studios Custom Framing. And she's got a show coming up this weekend. It's called Blend. The art that's there is going to be there all summer long, and it's an antique and modern art show. You're some of the screens that Don has done. Number two flying above us here.
That's right.
And also there's going to be art from Antique Collectibles by Donna K. Pillow. And the screens, you've seen the screens that Don has done in the past, man.
Gotcha.
Amazing art. And she's got an art opening or a reception there. It's going to be Saturday, the 24th, from 2 to 7 p.m. By Art Studios Custom Framing. It's located at 2828 East 10th Street in Long Beach in the corner of 10th and Temple. So if you get a chance, go on by there and check that out. I'll be there sometime that day. And it's always a good time. And we're welcome back. You're listening to Swoop Thrill Radio on blogtalkradio.com. We're here every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. Happy to have as our guest right now, Tonya Reyes-Aranga, who is the former 7th District Council person. And what do you got there? Oh, yeah. We got a hand up there?
No.
Okay. And we're going to be back with her right now.
Do you have a question to
you had a question.
I've forgotten. Like, people walk in, they're talking while I'm trying to read the commercial.
Well, my, having big fun here.
That's right. Well, my question is, so where do you see your career going from here? I know we kind of talked about that a little bit earlier, but you avoided the question.
I did avoid the question. I did. You know, I'm back at
school.
Have you
got plans?
I'm going back to school, and I'm also doing some work for the Labor Center at UCLA. And to see how the research they're doing on policy development really affects the decisions of local elected officials. You know, right now it is one of the biggest recessions or depressions, or whatever you want to call it, in a while. And I think, and I've said this before, that the biggest threat to our community, our society, is the gap between the have and the have-nots. And so, you know, it's interesting that people, you know, the union bashing that goes on in this town, but the bottom line is, that unless people are paid a good wage or a living wage, then we're going to have problems. And right now, people think that there's not the ability for labor to coalesce, to come together during hard times. So that's exactly when they really have the best results. And so tomorrow, anyone who wants to join me, I'll be at the Hyatt, in the Hyatt, taking some local action and marching for the women who clean the rooms in the Hyatt. It's a national day of action. A lot of the people at the Hyatt, I think it was in Baltimore. No, see, here I am really bad. I think it was Boston, the Baltimore. It was a B town. They let
Brilliant.
All the possibly I don't think there's a Hyatt there. They let all the housekeepers go, and they contracted out at minimum wage with no benefits. So it's, you know, here these people who have been there giving 20, 25, 30 years of their life, it's gone.
Yeah. I can tell we have not seen the last of you in public service.
No.
Well, another question I had is from a city point of view, what is the biggest, besides the recession we're in, because that's obvious, what's the biggest problem Long Beach is facing right now? What's the biggest hurdle we need to overcome and biggest challenge for us, Long Beach?
Oh, my God, one?
Oh, or list. Your top 10. You can do your David Letterman top 10.
Well, I think, one, we're going to have to come to grips with the lack of police on the streets. You know, we're down to like 916 officers or something like that. It's really dramatic, the number that we've also had a decrease in crime, yes, but the bottom line is that can change any time. And it takes us a year and a half to ramp up. And so really not having police, canceling our police academy was not a good thing, and so we're going to have to pay the consequences of not having enough boots on the street. So I think public safety is going to rear its ugly head soon, because we're not going to have these good times forever, if these are even in fact good times. So public safety is one thing. I think the second is that we're tackling Sacramento's inefficiencies, and they're broke and broken, and if we don't do something to protect ourselves as a city, then we're going to continue to be the whipping post, and they're going to take our money time and time again. And I think one of the third thing is we're going to have to figure out how to come to grips with our ports. I don't want to say they're killing us, but they're killing us. I mean, the pollution that we see is coming from the ports, and they've gotten greener and leaner and meaner. But when you expand the 710 freeway, there's 95,000. They're expanding the 710 freeway for 95,000 truck trips. Okay.
I thought the Alameda corridor was going to take over that, so we wouldn't have all the trucks on the 710, and they're going to track them out, train them out, or give them a road.
It's not at capacity, but it's even at capacity, we will still have that 95,000. Part of the problem is that by rail it's more expensive, and people have local deliveries, so we still have that issue of 95,000 truck trips a day that are going to go on that 710. So you're looking at 14 lanes, which is now, right now it's what, 6, 7 lanes, or 3 in the
depends on where you are, but yeah, somewhere
yeah,
between
six to eight. Yeah, that's doubling in size.
6 to 8 now. You know, I used to drive that 710 daily, and it's always packed.
Yeah.
It is always packed. So I can't, all the way you double it, it's just going to be more packed.
That'll be the expansion of the 710, the AIR is coming out this next couple of months. It's the largest infrastructure transportation project in the nation.
Yeah.
The nation. And it's in our backyard, and does anyone blink? And we have throat and mouth cancer clusters right off the freeway. We have, you know, we haven't really figured out how to mitigate the air quality. We have electric trucks, or separating the trucks from the cars, which we recommended, and have an electric truckway, or even the green trucks that come by. But come on. I mean, the port says all the trucks are green. But there's still some old trucks out there, and it's going to be 30 years before those trucks break down, and no one's going to sell them. I mean, so they may not be able to make it to the port, but they could come pretty close. They're still going to be going up and down the freeway.
Right.
So it's going to be a big, big environmental and infrastructure and economic question in the next 3 years, because if anything's going to be built, it'll be built in the next 10 years, but all the decisions are going to be made in the next 3 years.
So along those lines, as far as expansion goes, who's deciding there? Is it the city? Is it the county? Is it the state?
Funding partners. The funding partners are the Port of Long Beach, the Port of L.A., MTA, and Caltrans. And our vote, we get a vote. And our vote is the mayor. So Mayor Bob, who unfortunately did not attend any of our 710 meetings, we've had 22 meetings in the last 14 months to talk about the impact to the local community. But I think that everyone needs to call and talk to him and say what you feel. But he will be voting for the city of Long Beach, and him and the mayor of Commerce. So it's the two ends of the freeway have major votes.
And then how many other? How's this process work?
They have a project committee, so it's the mayors of Commerce and Long Beach, a port representative, it's the port commissioners, the Port of LA, the Port of Long Beach, MTA, and Caltrans. So they all get in a room. The people who put $5 billion down to do this study. We'll have a vote on what the end result says and which kind of scenario we're talking. There's four scenarios right now, and most of them are the 14 lane. Oh, three out of the four are the 14 lane. Only one is not.
What's that one?
Mm-hmm. No change other than just improvements.
No, that's not happening.
Well, Tonya, we're going to have to wrap this up and bring these guys on here in a minute, but we really appreciate you stopping in and joining us tonight. And as always, you know, I've always been a big supporter, and I hope that you continue to do good things for our community.
Well, I've never known to be quiet, so you'll definitely hear from me. But I'm looking forward to your next guest. I hear they're very interesting.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate you coming on. We're going to go to a quick break. This is our segment of the Sunday Market Report. Sam Paano of Gourmet Conspiracy. He down at the Sunday Farmers Market here in Cal Heights. He meets with a lot of the people down there, and he puts a little podcasting together, and he gives us a little clip to give you an idea of what his podcast is going to be about. So we're going to play that, and when we get back, we'll have the LB Food Review.
Hi, everybody. This is Sam Paano of Gourmet Conspiracy here for the Long Beach Sunday Market Report. And today we've got a lot of great happenings here at the market. Well, first and foremost, we have our pie baking contest. Several of the contestants have already brought in their pies, and we'll be judging them in a little bit. Secondly, we have jazz out here. We've got a group of guys with their guitars going to be starting out providing us jazz music. We also have Organic Pastures, who is going to make a presentation about milk, organic milk, all sorts of dairy products such as butter and cream. cream cheese and such. Shortening Bread Cafe is open. You have to check them out. They've got such great biscuits with jam, ricotta cheese and such. To spice up your everyday cooking, we also have Awakened Savor. She's got all sorts of different spices that you can try out for your everyday cooking to turn it more into exotic dishes. We also have Parks Farms, and one of the most anticipated fruits that everybody's been waiting for is the tomatoes, and July is started, the tomato season. So we've got a lot of vendors here that are offering different types of tomatoes. You can also join the Long Beach Local CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And it's a way for you to lower your carbon footprint and also support local farmers and food reform. Next week, for our Chefs at the Market demo, we have Chef Paul Buchanan of Primal Alchemy, who will be presenting recipes using tomatoes. This is Sam Pagno for the Long Beach Sunday Market Report, wishing you all a prosperous and healthy week.
And that was the Sunday Market Report from Sam Pagno. And it sounds like the Primal Alchemy is going to be there next week, so that's always good. I've seen that chef at a couple different events, and he usually puts some good things together. We are a couple things we need to mention. We got an announcement to make. Next week, a friend of ours, Michelle Mangione, is releasing a new song that she has co-written with Grace Slick. And for those of you who don't know who Grace Slick is, she was the lead singer from Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship and whatnot. And when the song is released, we are working right now to possibly have Michelle and Grace on with us next week sometime. So we'll keep you informed on that and let you know what's happening with that new song. And it's supposed to be pretty good. It's a lot of people have pitched in and joined in on it because it's kind of a thing about the oil spill. And I think it's kind of a We Are the World type thing, but I'm not sure. I have to talk to Michelle about that. But I do know the song has been finished. The master has been worked on, and we should be hearing something here soon, and hopefully we'll let you know. It'd be great to have Grace and Michelle on together.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Chris Taylor, LB Food Review, what's happening, brothers?
What's up, man?
This is your official introduction.
Chris is in the zone right there. Right? Yeah. Chris and I, we were just talking here off the air about Powerhouse Fitness. For those of you who remember John and Jack Nunn, who were here from Powerhouse Fitness a few months ago, the rowing center here in Long Beach. They have two rowing centers. Chris and I have been going in there and knocking it out and having a little fun. And he's able to talk while he rows, and I'm sucking wind, man. He's younger than me now.
I don't know when knock that's part of the training for me. I need to be able to work out and talk at the same time.
Yeah, you know, usually Stephanie fills that spot, but so Tom knows. Tom O'Keefe has stopped in. We're happy to have him. Good friend, and he's been a previous guest on the show talking about nutrition.
Don't get me started.
So tell us, guys, what's new and improved in the food world?
Well, hey, I don't know. I think you guys have a pretty tech-savvy audience here with Swoops World, and so for those of you guys who are out there on the Twit Face or Book or whatever you want to call it, LB Street Food Fest is coming up this Saturday.
That's right.
You guys have probably caught on to at least one of these new fandangled food trucks that come through town. These aren't your grandpa's roach coaches that serve dirty...
Hey, wait, whoa. Do not knock the roach coaches.
I did not. I just said this wasn't what they're dealing with here. This Saturday, from I think like 10:30 to 5 or something, down at Rainbow Lagoon Park, there are going to be over 20 of these food trucks.
On the way.
Yeah, and it's been put on by the Long Beach Junior Chamber of Commerce, and it's going to be quite the mecca of greasy food served out of truck windows.
And, you know, the thing is I've eaten off some of those trucks, and some of those guys are, I mean, they're gourmet trucks. They are gourmet trucks, and it's from 10:30 to 5, and it's going to be held, like you said, at Rainbow Lagoon Park on Shoreline Drive, and there's an article about it on everythinglongbeach.com, so you can check that out and get all the facts on it, but you're right, there's going to be quite a few trucks, and we, oh, God, what was it, the green thing down here. What did they have? The Green Fest they had last month?
Green Expo. No, Green...
Whatever. they had a couple. They had the French fry truck there.
The French fry truck is going to be there this weekend. The grilled cheese truck is going to be there. A couple of the other big ones that I've
Burger
that
Babe,
sampled.
Man, you got to check
Burger Babe.
I have not had the pleasure yet.
From personal experience.
Burger Babe.
I've had the Kogi. Yeah, I've had that one. I've had Don Chow, which is going to be there at this one. It seems like there's a lot of these Asian Mexican fusion. Truck.
Well, that's what started it off.
Yeah,
what's wrong with that?
Not, a damn thing wrong with that.
Well, you got the, let's say, you got the buttermilk truck.
You told me about that.
Gooey grilled cheese. Gooey grilled cheese truck. Border Grill, the two hot tamales. They their truck. You know, I saw their truck at Dodger Stadium last week. I didn't get over there, but Mary Sue Milliken and Susan Seneger, you guys know.
Oh, yeah.
You're food guys. You don't know who the two hot tamales are? Oh my gosh.
$50.
I ate at one of the restaurants in Vegas, but they started out here. I think it's Santa Monica or somewhere, the Border Grill. So they have a truck.
I've been to the Border Grill in Santa Monica.
Yeah, well, their truck's going to be there.
That downtown.
Yeah. they're good, man. So there's quite a few trucks here, man. That's good. That's very good. What have you guys sampled recently?
I will say that work has been keeping me very busy enough that I've been eating bagged lunches and stuff like that. But,
okay, well, do you want a bagged lunch, man?
But, here we go. Taylor and I got together with Diane on Sunday night, and we made beer can chicken.
I've seen that.
And we stuffed the chickens with about, I don't know, a quarter pound of bacon, and then drape the bacon all across the top of the chicken.
It's like a top chicken right now, man.
And then we.
But you all your fruits and vegetables you got to eat to offset that?
What are those?
Hey, man, I'm fat by choice. But the truth of the matter is.
I get a bad name wherever I go.
It was. They were some delicious ass chickens.
I stole one of those thighs out of your fridge today.
And
it was good 3 days later. Oh, it was fabulous.
But you know, we also do our Adventures of a Foodie thing where we go all over the place and try different places where we go. And on the way to the Dodgers game 2 weeks ago, we went to Ciro's Tacos on Evergreen.
Gotta go there, man.
And my God, it was delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, the food. I don't know any other Mexican restaurant that you go in that they give you these huge chunks of avocado salsa for included. You know what I mean? It's not like when you go to El Torito and they charge you $10 for this little bowl of guacamole. I mean, this is some good stuff. You know, so I did that, and you know, we've been trying to get into doing more of the Cambodian Thai stuff in Long Beach because it's kind of, you don't really find many people writing about it or talking about it. And people will say, you know, oh, I've been to all the restaurants in Long Beach. There's none of this kind of food. And I'm like, well, you haven't been down Anaheim. Like, you know, just you know, where the signs change languages you don't understand.
Pull in.
Find out what's going on. But, you know, so we're trying to get out there and do some more stuff. We've all been working on putting some projects together and stuff like that. And, you know, we're going to keep moving forward on trying to do some charity events and stuff like that, which is kind of consuming our time at the moment.
You know, next time you're in L.A., you went to Ciro's, check out El Tepeyac. You ever been to El Tepeyac?
I've been to El Tepeyac. I love the Hollenbeck. The Hollenbeck is amazing. It's funny. I got introduced to both of those places by my dad because my dad went to USC pharmacy school, and they were across the street at County General Hospital. Mm-hmm. So they always used to, you know, go right over to these places. And, you know, the funniest thing is you take somebody to Tepeyac on, you know, an off day, and they're like, man, where are you taking me? But you take them on lunchtime on, like, a Friday, and it's like, man, there's more people wearing suits in there than there is anything else, you know, because it's all the doctors from across the street.
You're always safe because half of them have suits in LAPD.
Yeah.
they've always got someone to stop who stabbed you and somebody to save your life. Perfect.
But something to remember, Ciro's takes cards. Tepeyac doesn't. So if you only got a credit card, you got no cash, just head 500 feet down the street.
Good to know.
On the right.
That's important information. I think.
And you'll get that. And that's something that we'd like to tell you guys that we are doing on our website. If you haven't actually been on our website, is we do tell you if it's cash only, if they accept cards. We do post all menus for any of the restaurants we can get them from. We put the menu up online. And, you know, we always tell you about what the price point is. So there's a lot of information there on the site for you to browse through.
You know, I was in L.A., and you got season tickets at the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to this place called Saratoga's.
Okay.
It's no longer Saratoga's. Now it's called El Campanchero, something like that.
Okay.
It's a Mexican restaurant now. And I love Saratoga. So mm-hmm. when they said we're going to this place, and then I saw Saratoga, I was a little down. But it was good. It was very, very good. And it's right at the Stadium Way and Sunset.
Okay.
But, well, not right there, but a block mm-hmm. away. So right across the street from what used to be the shortstop. So
yeah.
I've been to both of those places. And
I understand. I don't know if you guys have been there yet. Diane is driving for Taylor. She even talked to Taylor and I, bet, on Sunday night. She really wants us to go to a Laundress Pizza. It's on Pine.
Oh,
yes.
Go.
Yeah, I've never been there.
She says they have the best hot wings and that their pizza is really, really good. So
well, I think
we're going to be making
a Laundress hot wing.
Is it a Laundress hot wing?
Yeah,
he always says Laundress Pizza.
Right across the street from Starbucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we also were
City Hall favorite.
We're planning on making a trip tomorrow. Where we live is more over by the university, so we do a lot of the Second Street stuff and a lot of that area, just because it's close, comfortable, and it's quick.
Have you been to Number 9 on 4th Street?
Number 9 is that a spa restaurant?
Noodles and
I have not yet. You know, and we keep asking all these people, get on our website, please tell us places to go.
I just did.
Okay. it's not on the website. It's on your radio. But
just linked on our website.
Yeah. But you know, I really want to get over into more of the downtown Pine area. I haven't been to Waukano yet. I want to go.
Good.
You know,
I like it.
I want to go to a lot of the places down there. I have yet to be able to afford to have dinner at La Opera. I want to do that. And as a matter of fact, I think I'm going to be able to write a review in August of the 555 because I'm going to take Diane there for her birthday.
You said it online. Now you have to. I hope you got reservations.
That's the spot. That's the 555. We've been there a few times.
That's our little hideout. We have our little...
but one of my favorites down there is Modica. And Tony Modica, actually, as some of you may know, I do the off-road racing thing, Long Beach Racers. And we run into Tony occasionally at different races. And so we're going to, I love his restaurant. I love the food. I do the one with the jalapenos in it. The Spicy Joe, I think it's called, or the whatever it is. But it's pastrami with pastrami sandwich with marinara sauce and jalapenos stuffed all inside of it. And run for the tongue. But it's a good.
It's the bread
good
that
sandwich.
Makes it. The bread.
I used to live in the Cooper Arms, and
okay.
I lived in a. What do you call it? Efficiency? I had a Murphy bed that...
Economy.
When it folded down, there was no more living room space,
right.
And the kitchen was about as big as this computer.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a lot of time in Motorcade because I could pick up the phone and back to back with Oscar work there. You know, 5 minutes later, go down and pick up my food.
It's cool.
And I love the place. It's great. There probably about 4 weeks ago. So I went back down there. So you're heading down to Pine.
Yeah, I kind of want to do more of that area. We don't make it down there all that often, so.
There's a new Cuban restaurant on Broadway that I've been meaning to check out.
Yeah, it's the Crow's Nest, or what is it called? It's where Madame Jojo's used to be.
Yeah, right around there. Right around there. Yeah.
You know, did you guys get all those flyers from Madame Jojo's was going out of business?
No.
God, it was like tearjerkers. It's like, we've been in this city for so many years, we've got all these following, but we got to close our doors. And it was just like, God, this is a really sad story.
Well, it's like Arnold's.
Arnold's, yeah. But I always heard that Arnold's was really, it was a buffet.
It was. It's like if...
Expectations.
Manager expectations.
Boss, you had very low...
If
I'm
in,
fan, I gotta be honest.
If I'm in that area, I'm in Bacon Broil. I mean, you know, if I'm gonna eat greasy food, I'm gonna go to Bacon Broil.
But you're gonna go out to that carve your thing right.
You know what's great though? Bacon Broil has really, really, really good gravy. Okay, and you know how I found out the secret? I'm gonna tell you this. My friend Nick Moncrief dated a waitress there simply to get their gravy right.
Okay.
Yeah. How the fat becomes fatter. getting fat on your own time. I think I should write a book. But the secret of country gravy is taking the cream from cream of mushroom soup and adding that into the mixture. It is absolutely amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling that, though.
Well, do you like their gravy at Bacon Bro?
I don't eat breakfast there.
Well, country gravy. I mean, biscuits and gravy. Or, okay, you need to have a chicken fried steak.
Where do I go for chicken fried steak?
Where do you go for chicken fried
steak? I go for chicken fried steak.
I forget.
Cracker Barrel.
Well, yeah, but I mean, where's the Cracker Barrel?
You get on an airplane to go to Cracker Barrel.
We're on South Street, right over, and that's it moved in the last year and a half. It's west. Over the bridge from the TJ Maxx and all that kind of stuff.
Over in Cerritos?
Yeah.
Okay. Still, is it still Long Beach out there?
Well, hey, if there's a Cracker
Barrel. Long Beach adjacent.
There is a Cracker Barrel there. Taylor and I will be having lunch there on Friday because our office is on Bellflower and Artesia. By the way, Preferred Debt Solutions now is licensed to do credit repair. Come on over to Preferred Debt Solutions.
PDF,
where we make the magic happen.
Oh, last 10 minutes here, man. Well, you guys got any more words of wisdom for us?
Have we ever?
You know, I definitely think that anybody that listens to the show that does read our site, please leave comments. We want your input, you know, and it helps get more people reading our site too, and everything else, and you know. Thankful to you guys, our readership's gone up quite a bit, and you know we have a good time. We also invite other people to write for us. We're not exclusive. We're not sitting here saying that you know that your opinion doesn't matter. It really does. So if you want to throw together a four paragraph article about a restaurant you like and email it over to us, we'll edit it and then we'll put it on the website.
And then you can be writing it.
I tell you, every now and then, maybe once a month, take a Wednesday night off and listen to Swoops and for pub quiz on a Wednesday night.
Well,
trivia junkies out there.
That's fun, actually.
It is a good time. That's where I was last week, so I had to listen to the show the next morning. But that is a great time.
That is fun. Hey, now.
Speaking of listening to the show the next morning, all shows are archived on the website and downloadable for free.
Now, hey, so something tied into what we were trying to do was to head over, and I want to make sure our listeners hear this, is that we headed over to the Beef Palace, which I got to tell you, as soon as you told me the name, I was like,
it sounds a little
creepy.
Yeah.
You know, but I had to do so we went over there together, the four of us. We went over there together, and this is over on Warner and
Springdale.
And we went over there, and it was just amazing. This guy, it's like four or five generations of butchers.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this guy comes from. The place has been there for 40-something years, I think 41 years.
He's got a great sense of humor, too, on his sign. It'll say things like, you can lick our chops, but you can't beat our meat.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. But, so here's the thing. Is we went there, we talked to him, it was great. What we saw was great. But a week later, I went there because I was making a dinner for my wife. Something special, and damn, I've worked in D.C. and New York and L.A. and San Diego, so I mean, and I was a chef for 20 years. This was some of the best filet I've ever
You got to really refine this. You were a personal chef for some of the wealthiest people in the world.
Yeah.
Who could afford anything they wanted.
And it was my job to go get the best of whatever they wanted and then cook it for them. And this was probably better than anything I'd ever had before. It was spectacular. I also happened while I was there, I was like, well, throw in a couple of those Italian spicy sausages. And we had those two nights later. And even that was, without a doubt, the best Italian spicy sausage I've ever had, probably in my life. I mean, not spectacular, spectacular. And see, the thing is the plays aren't even their age stuff. Because right. That's what my wife likes, mm-hmm. So that's what I got. That's not what I would have got. The best stuff is the age stuff. So this stuff is that good.
Right.
So for all of our listeners out there, anybody who's interested in looking for a good butcher, it's not cheap.
All of our vegan listeners out there.
Yeah. You're not going to get anything. There's no, like, buy cheap meat, which nobody should ever be looking for anyhow. But if you're buying your beef at places like Whole Foods and Bristol Farms, these guys beat them on price, and quality far surpassed them. It was spectacular. So I want to thank you guys for introducing us to that.
I got introduced to the owner of the Beef Palace at a USC tailgate party where he was laying out everything. Because he's friends with a friend who's a friend of a friend, but he's involved with the Huntington Beach City Council. So he was one of the city councilmen. Don Hansen is a friend of ours through our circle that we go to the FC games with. But Taylor and I were actually there a little bit before you guys, when they opened the doors up for the first time of the day. Now, for some people, this might sound disgusting, but the smell of raw beef just came flowing out the door. It was amazing. It was amazing. And they had
I know a tree hugger in San Diego that's freaking out right now.
And the truth of the matter is that this guy that owns this place is really into what he does. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It is not a
passionate.
It is not just a job for
no.
this guy.
Nope.
He knows meat. I mean, this guy will. I mean, he's a fourth generation butcher. And you know, you walk in the store and it's like you look around and the color of the beef is just it's the aged stuff is the perfect kind of
and
brownish
not just the
color.
Beef. They had spectacular rib. Pork ribs
and prime ribs
and lamb. If you're
yeah,
into lamb, which I'm a big fan.
And fresh scallops.
Scallops, which I also purchased, which were also spectacular.
And sushi grade fish.
Yep.
They have tuna. They have halibut.
Now, disclaimer: the fish selection is not huge. You shouldn't
no.
be going there for the fish.
No,
but if
it's
you want to have
beef
yes. But if you want to, while you're there, pick up some decent cod. They don't have a giant selection, but what they have is top notch.
So you know, it was absolutely amazing, and yes, we always, you know, tell everybody stay in Long Beach. But one of the butcher shops that I knew was there for a long time, which was over on Clark and Atherton,
mm-hmm.
no longer there anymore.
I don't know of any
butcher. Yeah,
I don't know
yeah.
of any butcher shops in the city. I can't, you know.
So sometimes we just need to go a little bit beyond our
yeah.
reach.
Yeah.
Stay local.
Yeah. It's still local, but you know the thing is that go over there and support him. We need to support small businesses like this guy. He's continued to truck through it, but you know what? The guy, his quality is so high that over 50% of his business is sold directly to restaurants. Restaurants come to him for the best cuts of beef that they can.
I can easily see why, man. That was really just a spectacular meal.
Okay, I got one assignment for you guys before we go off the air here.
Okay.
We need to find a good sausage around here. I went to a sausage place I was telling you about. I can't pronounce it. It's off of Traction and 3rd down in L.A. That's why I sell sausages. Sausages and great beer.
Mm-hmm.
I had an Allagash with my, you know, but they have all these exotic.
The Chimay on tap.
Yeah, the Chimay on tap. And then they have all these sausages, you know, the bratwurst, this and the other. They have the exotics. I had alligator pork and andouille sausage.
Nice.
And andouille is you know, the sausage. And then you had a...
Now, you didn't have... You saw the menu. You saw the... I was looking at that going, they had a rabbit and duck and bacon sausage, which has got to be the greatest thing on earth.
Oh, my God.
Right there. I mean, just everything you could possibly... Chicken, any... It looked good.
So that's your assignment.
Hey,
you know, when I go to buy sausage, I just got to say,
I'm a restaurant that sells.
I want to look for this too, because when I need to buy sausage for gumbo or for anything like that, I always go to a farmer's market in L.A.
Well, this is a restaurant. This is
okay.
It's not like a. They're cooked. And
oh, okay. Okay.
You have different choice of toppings for your bread and stuff like that. Hey, that's it. That's it for us on Soup Swirl this week. We're here every Wednesday night, 9 o'clock. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and send us an email, swoopsworld@gmail.com. You can always check out our website, swoopsworld.com. I want to thank our guests. I want to thank Tonya Reyes-Aranga, Chris Livingston, and Taylor Nelson of LB Food Review. And we'll see you again next week, Long Beach.
Good night, all.